This is a podcast for the MA in Online Journalism by Distance Learning at Birmingham City University.
In this third podcast, I want to talk about one particular case study of community management in action, and specifically a project which I've been working on for the last couple of years and which I've spent quite a bit of time researching in terms of how community management worked in practice in a particular editorial project. And the project, of course, is Help Me Investigate, which is a website that aimed to crowdsource investigative journalism and was launched in July 2009, funded initially by Channel 4 and Screen West Midlands. Crowdsourcing, of course, is basically using a diverse crowd of people to get input into a particular project. The classic form is where you have different people contributing different bits of information, or a large number of people all looking at a collection of different documents or pieces of information and drawing your attention to the interesting stuff. Now, with Help Me Investigate, we launched the website with two members of staff. One was a community manager and the other was a support journalist, Heather Brook, who wrote the book Your Right to Know and has written another couple since. Heather was an expert in freedom of information, and her role was a support journalist, the idea that she would support that community in pursuing the questions that it raised. So it kind of turned the traditional publishing model of audiences supporting journalists on its head, so that you had a journalist supporting a community. Now, the website has been running for about 2.5 years now. I've launched a new project, a new Help Me Investigate project focused on three particular areas. But in its initial form, Help Me Investigate was an open platform where people could suggest questions, and then the site would break that down into tasks so that different people could contribute in different ways. So it wasn't really a publishing tool, it was a project management tool. And that was an important decision, because we had to look at the objectives of users rather than journalists. And the objective of users was to be able to break down something which would otherwise be intimidating, in this case an investigation, into manageable tasks in such a way that lots of different people could take on different tasks depending on their own interests and abilities. Now, this resulted in a number of successful investigations, the most well-known being an investigation into the Birmingham Council website and the amount of money that was being spent on that and why it was late. It involved stories such as the worst streets in Birmingham for parking fines. But the one investigation that I researched in particular depth was an investigation into a magazine called The London Weekly. Now, the story here was that a group of people announced to the media press that they were going to launch a free newspaper in London. They said that they had £50 million of investment, they had a staff of 50 people, and they were going to have a circulation of 250,000 copies every week. Now, these claims were reported without any challenge in most of the media press, but a couple of journalists were sceptical about why an organisation would want to launch another free newspaper into London, a market where other big news organisations had already struggled, and who would invest £50 million in such a project. Now, to cut a long story short, the investigation discovered that it was very unlikely that anyone had invested any money in this project, because no company had actually been registered. There was no limited company. The claims about distribution had been copied and pasted from a Scottish media pack, and most of the staff were untraceable and most likely didn't exist, particularly the head of a company, who was Agnes Teresa, Mother Teresa. So, but what I was really interested in was what made this a successful investigation, and my research uncovered five key ingredients, and you can read more details on this in a series of blog posts which are currently running on the Online Journalism blog, and which I'll post a link to at the bottom of this podcast. So the five ingredients were, firstly, what I would call the 1%. So you need a core of individuals who are going to be heavy contributors to your community-driven project. Jakob Nielsen has done a number of pieces of research into how people use websites, and he came up with, he basically observed a repeated pattern of how many people interacted with websites in particular ways, and he coined this phrase of the 99-1 pattern, which is that 90% of people on a particular website or web page are likely to be lurkers. They don't interact with the website in any way, or post comments or vote. They just read the content and move on. 9% of users are what he describes as intermittent contributors. So they will occasionally post a comment or upload something or do some sort of contribution. And then the final 1% are the heavy contributors. They make up the majority of activity on that website, the majority of contributions to the content on that website. And you see similar patterns play out in user-generated content sites such as YouTube and Flickr, where a small proportion of users actually are responsible for the majority of videos or the majority of photos. And that 1% drives a lot of the rest of the content and activity on the platform, in this case Help Me Investigate. If you don't have that passionate individual or set of individuals who are driving an investigation along, then it is unlikely that other people will get involved. So that's the first, I think, key characteristic of any community-driven project. You need a small pocket of users who are very prolific, and you need to invest in supporting that group of people so that they can continue to do so. And I'll outline some of the other features which help you to do that. The other thing is that you are likely to be part of that 1%. You should be part of that 1% yourself in the very early days of a site, because if you don't invest your own effort in moving things along, then other people are unlikely to do so as well. So that's the first quality that came out of this research. And these qualities are backed up by research into other crowdsourcing and community-driven projects as well. The second quality is feedback. And this is a principle which you'll see across all kinds of disciplines. In game design, for example, feedback is a very key piece of the way that games are designed. The idea that every action that you make should have some sort of reaction so that you know your activity has been successful. In the case of an editorial project, that means that if someone makes a contribution, there should be some feedback to that person to make them aware of that, that it has had some impact. That might be an automated response, but it might be you taking the time to thank them personally, or some other user making that effort to connect with that person. If you're dealing with a large-scale project, you might design your interface in such a way that feedback is visible. So, for example, when The Guardian crowdsourced its MP's expenses documents, they created a sort of progress bar where you could see how many documents had been analysed. And as you added your own contribution to that, you ideally could see that progress bar change. You would get that feedback. And in fact, they adapted as they went into the second version of the project to make that project bar focused on a smaller proportion of documents so that you would see your contribution more easily. The third feature of a crowdsourced experiment, a community-driven experiment that made it successful, is modularity. And this is the ability to break down a task into smaller tasks. So if you said to someone, I'd like you to investigate what is happening with Birmingham Council's website, that seems quite an impenetrable challenge to do. You know, where do I start with this process? How can I contribute to it? But what Help Me Investigate did very well was break down that big investigation into much smaller tasks, modules, if you like, where different people could contribute in different ways. So if one person was very good at freedom of information requests, that's where they could contribute. If another person had a good network and could invite friends, then that was their contribution. Another person might look at documents. Another person might find an expert. That modularity is really important in making it easier for people to contribute in different ways. And that takes me on to the fourth quality of Help Me Investigate, and again, crowdsourcing more generally, which is diversity and capacity. Really, there are two types of crowdsourcing projects. One is where you just need a mass of people to look through a mass of documents, and the diversity of those people isn't important. But in this particular case, where you have an investigation which involves a lot of different questions and different disciplines, then you need diversity in the population of users, the community. So you might need some with legal expertise, some with a kind of a campaigning ability, some with knowledge of regulations and so on. So diversity is something you should probably aim for in your community, because you will need different people to do different things. But you will also need capacity. You will need sheer numbers, because partly because you will get dropouts. You will get people who are unable to contribute, either because they haven't the time, or because other events overtake them, or because they lose interest. So you need that capacity and an attention to building that capacity as you go forward. And then the final quality is visibility. One of the things about the London Weekly investigation was that the London Weekly was published every Friday and Saturday. And so during the investigation, there was very much a sense that we were building up every week to those days to see if the latest issue would come out. And when I looked at the data, I expected to see a peak of activity on Fridays and Saturdays as people found out whether it did indeed get printed and distributed. What I actually found was a peak on Wednesdays, and I hadn't expected this, and so I tried to find out why. And the reason it turned out, most likely, was because one of the 1% of very active contributors, a man called James Ball, who now works at The Guardian, James had been blogging about the investigation every Wednesday evening, which then basically triggered an increase in activity on that day. So being visible about a project, a community-led project, talking about it, tweeting about it, blogging about it, looks like it will increase the chances of that project being successful. It will increase activity. It will broaden the diversity and the capacity of the project. So those are the five qualities of one particular case study. And as I say, if you look in the blog posts about this, which is a serialisation of a book chapter that I wrote, you will see more detail on how this relates to the wider literature around crowdsourcing. And you'll find similar patterns identified in other community-driven projects. So just to sum up, the five qualities that you might be looking for include investing in the 1% of users who are heavy contributors. You want increased visibility of your project so people are aware of it. You want to give people feedback as they go, so that they know that their contribution makes a difference and they get some reward for that or some feedback for that. You want a modularity, so that a big task is broken down into small ones where different people can input. And you want diversity and capacity in your community, and you want to direct your efforts towards encouraging and attracting that diversity and capacity.